Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hello. Boy, are we having issues tonight. Okay, so we had some technical difficulty there. I don't know if anybody can hear me. I'm going to bring Carol on to see if she can hear me. Carol, are you there?
I am. I can hear you.
Okay, good. I had to actually call back in, and it's just not registering the show. So that's just very weird, too. That's never happened before. So, all right, I'm going to assume, since you can hear me, I'm going to assume that we do have a live show.
All righty. Is there any way anybody can give you feedback?
Yes, I'm asking. I'm texting people now. So anybody who knows my number, you want to text me and let me know if you can hear me, that'd be great. I have no idea. Usually we have a show intro. We have music. We have all kinds of things for this show. But we didn't have any of that tonight. And I have no idea why. So let me just try this again. Okay, if you're just joining us or you're just hearing us, we are The Whole Scoop Radio. We are a health and wellness radio show where our guests are highly credentialed in the topics we discuss. That is the stipulation for being on this show. You cannot be a guest on this show without having the credentials to back up what you're saying. That's why I structured it. That's how I structured it. That's why I started it. That's why you listen. I am Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian, your host, and I've practiced for longer than I want to admit. I've founded Naturally Nutrition, Inc., and you can check me out there at naturallynutritioninc.com. For those of you who are just joining us tonight, you didn't get the whole thing there, the whole scoop. We're going to get the whole scoop, but you didn't get the whole intro. How about that? And so tonight we have an exceptionally special show. I'm so honored. We are doing Hope and Healing with very special guest, Carol Howe. And on a personal note, I just need to say this show is dedicated to my newest angel, Duke. So all that being said, let me remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics we discuss, it's recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. I'm getting much better at reading that faster just so that I can say that I did it. There you go. The call-in number is 347-855-8894, 347-855-8894. If you're listening by phone, and normally we take questions on this show later on, I'm not sure if we're going to get there tonight or not, because I'm really not sure what's happening right now. But if we do, and you feel like you need to ask a question as you're listening, press the number one to get in the queue. That'll let me know on the board. It's supposed to let me know on the board, but the board's kind of weird tonight, that you have a question, and we'll go from there. You can also direct your questions and comments to our Facebook Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio group. And you can tell us what you like to hear, what you don't like to hear, what you like about the show, what you want to hear again, all of that stuff, and the wholescoopradio.com. So if you are going to ask a question, I will call out the last four digits of your telephone number to let you know that it's you that's on the air. So if you push the number one and you go and use the vacuum cleaner, you may not like really hear the last four digits being called out. So remember that. Okay, there you go. Carol Howe, she's on the line with us. Usually, I don't bring the guests on until after I do all this. So, Carol, I'm just going to ask you to sit through this for a minute, so I can let everybody know who you are. Okay.
Okay.
Carol is a lifelong student of Universal Principles, is an internationally recognized master teacher of A Course in Miracles, and acclaimed author with over 40 years' experience teaching, speaking, and counseling in the psycho-spiritual field. She's a close personal friend of A Course co-scribe, Bill Thetford. She authored an intimate account of his life entitled Never Forget to Laugh. A gifted communicator, she conveys his story as well as the life-altering spiritual principles of the Course with warmth, compassion, and humor. In 2015, Carol completed a four-year project to capture her profound understanding of the Course in a transformational eight-part online program, See How Life Works. Rapidly receiving worldwide acclaim, it presents the course as never before, featuring high-quality animation, three-dimensional interactive models, and spontaneous interaction with an online class. The program is designed to help viewers quickly release fear, anxiety, and emotional pain, and reprogram their minds for a happier, more peaceful life. Since then, five other major online programs have been released that continue to bring clarity to the overall topic of healing and achieving peace of mind. Additionally, she has created hundreds of audio, video programs, blogs, articles, podcasts, and more that feature the practical application of A Course in Miracles, and is the author of Healing the Hurt Behind Addictions and Compulsive Behaviors and Homeward to an Open Door. For more information, you can reach her at carolhowe.com. That's www.carolhowe.com. But before I actually say hello to Carol, I need to do one other thing, because I was looking at all the information on her, and there are so many people and so many testimonials, and I need to just read this. And I can say that she and I have had very short conversations of recent trying to set this up, and I've not really done a very good job at staying communicative with this, so I openly put that out there. But every single time that I have talked with Carol, she's been exceptionally gracious and exceptionally phenomenal. But I found this testimonial that I kind of wanted to share with everybody before she actually starts to talk, so that you know, and that we all have a clue as to just how lucky we are to have her tonight. And it says this: many of the most valuable hours of my life have been spent listening to the voice of Carol Howe. She is a wise and gentle teacher who inspired and guided me, made deep and profound realizations and transformations possible. Trying to explain in a few words what it's like to be in the presence of an angel is impossible, but if you are ever fortunate enough to just hear her voice, listen closely, because in a few short minutes, you will know that you are love and loved. And on that note, I want to say hello and welcome to Carol Howe.
Oh, bless your heart. That's such a sweet thing for you to do. Well, I'm delighted to be here, and it doesn't matter what the technical difficulties are. You know, one of the things that the Internet has made so to speak, is that everything is very friendly and very casual, and things may or may not go right or whatever, but we're just used to that. So rather than being rigid and formal and everything has to be a certain way, one has to get over that. So as I was listening to your list of things, which is actually true, you can say, this lady never stops talking. I've recorded so many things, but it's like I sort of don't in a way, because I feel absolutely compelled, if you will, in a positive way, to make universal principles as simple and accessible and usable and germane to our lives as possible, because you know what? Basically nobody, maybe some of the little kids in this, in a new generation, are getting wonderful material, but mostly we've all grown up learning things about ourselves that simply aren't true. Not because it was deliberate, not because there was any malfeasance, you know, afoot or something like that, but up until very recently, people didn't understand things like we inherit through our ancestral lines. This is some of the new biology. We inherit some wounding. We inherit some fear and guilt. And when we're infants, so to speak, with a very unformed brain, there's no filtering that filters out all the impressions, all the sounds, all the everything else around us. And then you add to that almost no parents, except an occasional exception, and possibly some of the newer generation, had no clue about how to help little children regulate their emotions. Well, so what all of that ends up being is that every single one of us carry fear, we carry guilt, we carry a rat's nest of stuff down in our own unconscious. And even though we may not be aware of it, it drives the bus, shall we say, of our lives. And when we don't know it's there and we don't understand why we do the things we do, we don't understand why our relationships sometimes are a mess, and we don't understand often the relationship between what we believe, mostly a lot of erroneous stuff, and our physical difficulties. In other words, all of this is a package deal. So if you don't understand some of the foundational reasons for it, we try to fix it in ways that don't help. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you put it in perspective like that, with it's kind of like you can go back to the analogy, I think, that you just used to open the show with the internet and all the information, and we just are used to essentially noise. And that's what I think that you just described. We have a bunch of noise that we've been reared with, and trying to process through it and trying to kind of be a part of or try to extrapolate what's real and what isn't is very difficult. So yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Well, and it kind of leaves us in the state of the people over in Western Europe in the 13th century that looked out and said the earth is flat. See, anybody can see. It comes to an end. The sky begins. The earth is flat. Well, it's not criminal to believe that the earth is flat, but it greatly hampers how you live your life. If you really think you're going to go fall off the edge of the earth out there and dragons are going to get you when you fall off, this curtails what you can do. In other words, so the things that we've believed about ourselves that aren't true, aren't evil or terrible, but they do imprison us. They imprison us both mm-hmm. physically and psychologically, and because it's all laid down so early, we go, what? You know, what's unusual about the way I think or process or something? Because basically, what we have, if we see it in this way, it's like we've got 7 billion people on the planet, all of whose decisions and actions and body functioning is being directed by a 2-year-old brain. In other words, the way we got wired when we were very early, until we recognize that that can be done differently, we just plow ahead without examination, without self-examination. Until we start to go, why do I do this? Why do I behave this way? Where does this constant, I can't do this or I have to do this, where do my defenses come from? Rather than just assuming that, well, this is the way it is. Well, it may be this is the way it is, but it's not the way it has to be. But if you don't know the origin of all of this, then you almost don't know where to start. In my very early career, before I got into what I do now, I was a systems engineer with IBM. which was a fabulous, wonderful job, and I loved it dearly. And because of that, among many other things, I know a whole lot about programming and about debugging programs and writing programs and overseeing the construction of programs. And we have basically a programming problem. So it's not us. We aren't defective. We don't have anything the matter with us, but we are operating with some programming that doesn't serve us. And, of course, what you do with computers is you look at the output you're getting. Let's pretend like it's a report of some kind, and it comes out sideways. Then you go, well, this is not the computer trying to drive me crazy. It says that somewhere in the stream of coding instructions, somebody has just merely put in an incorrect instruction to the computer. So you go back upstream, find that inappropriate logic, change it, and then you get the output that you need. Well, we're very much the same way. In other words, brains are like computers, and the programming of what got wired in when we were very young continues to give us output in our lives that might look like, I feel small, I feel afraid, I secretly don't think anybody's going to pay any attention to me. In other words, the programming that we have to deal with is not, does a report come out sideways, but because those beliefs, which is what they are, have been with us since as far back as we can remember, it doesn't occur to us to go, is this true? And we must ask that question, because until we can see our setup properly, which is we are being run by ancient programming from when we were little kids and expecting to have a happy, prosperous, joyful, expansive result. And that isn't going to happen. So sooner or later, if we're wise, we go, is this the only way there is to live? You know, is there something missing?
Yeah.
Like, could I possibly do some introspection? And once you say, I wonder what else there is to life that I might find out about, then you will find yourself, we'll just call it on a path because that's easy language, where you will be presented with all sorts of opportunities to keep learning and growing and deepening and understanding your relationships and so on and so forth. But it starts with our recognizing there's got to be a better way to live than this, whatever the this is for somebody.
So if somebody gets to that point and says there's got to be a better way to live, there's got to be more to it than just saying that, right? I mean, where does one start?
Well, one starts in many, many different directions. It depends upon what century, what country, what religion, what educational. In other words, the where you start is going to have to be consistent with whatever is your worldview now. Where do you find yourself now? And the thing that is fascinating and that I find that it happens all the time, when there is a sincere inner desire to go, I'd like to know what's really going on. It seems like I've tried really hard and nothing is different or whatever. Once that is a genuine, I really would like to know what's going on, then it is amazing the way you will, quote unquote, mysteriously hear about a book, hear about meditation, find out that a Buddhist center has just opened up down the block from you. In other words, once you indicate, this is something that I would like to find out more about, stuff tends to drop in your lap. Because if it didn't, you wouldn't even know where to start. In other words, if you know nothing about any sort of a psycho-spiritual practice. But I've talked to so many people who have said, you know, books kind of fell off the shelf at them, or they suddenly met a new next-door neighbor who started talking about unity churches or something like that. In other words, once you're ready, then the opportunity to take whatever is your most appropriate next step will show up like clockwork. It's amazing. I find it amazing. I still find it amazing.
It is truly. I mean, there are some. I don't believe in coincidences. I believe we're on a path and we're supposed to be where we are. It's what I find though is the entanglement of if I'm supposed to be here, then what is the message? Because I'm not getting it.
And always there's what kind of one thing, so to speak, and that is if we make this in such simple terms that it's almost like a cartoon, in other words, we'll make like strip away anything that's sophisticated or complex about it, is that in all of this early programming, the net result is that we feel guilty. We feel deeply somewhere that we've ruined ourselves. And that might appear to a kind of a belief that that I'm not as good as somebody else, or no matter how hard I try, I don't measure up, or I take care of everybody else's needs, but I put me off the list. In other words, it's like that sense of I'm not worthy, which is the same as saying I'm guilty, can show up in surprisingly sort of the same way all over everywhere. It doesn't even matter what country you're in. And that distress over we fear that we've ruined ourselves it finally becomes intolerable. And one of two things happens, because this is a painful thing. This is why everybody in the world is addicted to something. In other words, if I ask everybody, okay, for 24 hours, would you put away your phone, all of your electronics, sex, drugs, rock and roll, extra food, sports events, all the things that pull our attention outward? And if I said, just don't do anything but like be with yourself for 24 hours, how many takers do you think I would find out of 7 billion people on the planet?
Well, let me ask you this. How long does that usually last with people that say they can do it?
You do find people who are willing to go off on silent retreats and things like that where it's kind of an enforced. But I would say the percentage of the population who would be willing to do that is such a small fraction. I probably couldn't even figure out what a small little percentage of 1% that is. Because the reason why is we're afraid of the way we feel. It's like, I'm not going there. I'm not going to just sit here and be with me, you know, and not be distracted. And you can go, if everybody in the world doesn't want to be distracted, there's something in common going on with everybody, which is just fascinating.
Right.
You know, if you really and truly, if you ask anybody off the street, could you just please not use your phone or television or anything just for 24 hours? I don't know. I think you could hear a howl out to the edge of the galaxy. It's like, no,
phone. Yeah, I think you might get some takers, but my guess is that they think they can do it, and I'm guessing the average time period is you'd be lucky to get somebody to last an hour.
And the thing is if all of us would go, what are we afraid of? What's going on that we're so unwilling to just be still and to be quiet? It's just because we begin to feel a way that we do not want to feel. And you can call it, it could be emotional, you know, it could be sad, it could be angry, it could be nervous, it could be whatever you call it, doesn't matter. But what we have to realize is that this is the self-generated result of believing all of that stuff, because it hasn't occurred to us that it's inaccurate. In other words, it's like our belief that we're not okay causes us great pain. And because we don't know where this pain comes from, we just medicate, either literally or through addictions or through busyness or through high drama or something, basically all of our lives, and we don't ask the question, why am I doing this? We just kind of become on automatic pilot, and we just let the stimulation around us just capture our attention, and our attention continues to be drawn outward. And at some point, even all of that ceases to satisfy, or more importantly, it ceases to mask our upset. And then, of course, what you do is you throw into that mix our relationships. Unless you live in a cave in the Himalayas someplace, you're going to be relating with your fellow human being. And what our fellow human beings do, in fact, sometimes people say, is there something a matter with humans? Do they have a defective gene that says they can't get along with other people? It's like, no, no defective genes. But what happens in our relationships? You know, everybody starts out, probably every listener has had at least one kind of a love affair relationship, whether it's somebody you've married or been with or whatever, and it seems fabulous. And then all of a sudden, something seems to go wrong. Everybody can identify with that. And you go, what's gone wrong? Well, what's gone wrong is the honeymoon period where it seems like I have finally found someone who's going to help me get my way. In other words, whatever it is I didn't get earlier, however my father or my mother or somebody didn't treat me, now I've got somebody who's going to do this. So if you're starkly honest, you realize, oh, the big appeal of this relationship, although I want to be very nice to them and I want to do things for them, like, my motivation is I want to get something that I feel like I don't have. I want to feel some kind of love or care or happiness or contentment or something that it seems like I don't have now, but this relationship possibly can supply it. What do you think? Just from your own life, does that sound familiar?
I think it's absolutely familiar, but my question to you is this. So what I'm hearing from you is that we rely on other people to fulfill us, when in fact what you're really saying is if we spend time with ourselves,
absolutely,
that's when we actually
absolutely
fulfill.
And since the reason why we don't stay centered within ourselves is because it's too painful, because of this guilt that we carry along with us. And what relationships do is trigger that guilt. That's why some of the most awful experiences that people have are in their relationships, close relationships, when actually if we could have the right view of this or the right attitude toward it, what's happening is the way I am attacking myself by believing all kinds of too small things about myself, in other words, believing things that are not loving and they're not correct, these are all being brought up into my attention. And the purpose for that is for me to change my mind about me, since nobody else can get in my brain and change my mind about me. And until I do, the fundamental peace and joy and happiness and contentment, which is, listen to this carefully, built into everybody. It's built into the fabric of our being, and it can never go away, but it can be masked. It can be veiled. It would be like I'm sitting here in my office at one end of the house, and I love to play in my yard and do gardening and plant flowers and so on. So I have a pretty yard. And this would be like if I had closed the blinds so I couldn't see out, and I would go, oh, my God, it's like, what am I going to do? I've got to do something about making myself a beautiful backyard. It's like, no, I don't. My beautiful backyard is already there. I've just got to open up the blinds and and partake of what's already present. So the mm-hmm. thing that everybody is looking for, which is that sense of well-being, the sense of fulfillment, is this is the best news you'll ever hear, already present. Every time you say, I am, and follow it by whatever in the sentence, into that very statement, I am, all that everybody wants to experience is built into that. But it's covered over, and we can't access it. And so changing our minds is what allows us to access that. You know how nursery rhymes and fables from countries all down through the ages, there'll be some kind of a story or a fable about how there's a treasure house and there's a dragon or somebody guarding the door of the treasure house, and you've got to fight the dragon in order to get in. Everybody knows about those kind of stories. Well, they have an underlying reality to them, which is in order to experience the truth of who we really are and what we really are, we've got to go face to face with the pain that we've created by this accumulated belief in ourselves that we're not okay. So that's why pain must be walked through, not avoided and circumvented and walk the other way and pretend like it's there and whatever. Well, that's a tough sell. Most people are not going to be interested in doing this until life gets so bad they go, okay, I'm down on my knees. What do I have to do? So sometimes people right. are literally driven to their knees before they're willing to say, is there something about how life works that I don't know about? Does somebody have a secret someplace? Well, there isn't a secret, but we have been uninformed, because where is anybody going to learn about this? Not in schools, not in most Sunday schools, not in most organizations that you would have anything to do with. So the information is like right out here in front of our noses, but we haven't been looking for it up until now, and we haven't seen it. But all our answers, all our joy, all of our experiences that we want to have are right wherever my breath is. It's kind of the old saying, wherever you go, there you are. Wherever we yeah. go, literally, fulfillment is with us, but it's masked behind our sense of guilt. And until that's addressed and we keep letting it go, it still seems to be.
So you're saying
hidden.
Pretty much, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just want to understand. So you're saying that pretty much we've got an entire population of people that are kind of walking around shrouded by guilt.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's huge. I mean,
saying that exactly and specifically, and I've dealt with thousands and thousands of people, at least thousands and thousands, even doing private work with them, and the same thing over and over and over and over. The big three will finally drive people to their knees, either medical problems, physical problems that they don't know what to do with and can't fix or that reoccur, relationship problems that drive them crazy, or financial problems where they feel like I don't have what I need to live. So those three major departments of life are kind of where our inner pain will show up. There'll be something about the circumstances in one of those that will result in I don't know what to do. In other words, because what the problem is, we're trying to fix all those things out here in the world. In other words, I'm going to try to take medicine, or I'm going to try to find a nicer person to be with, or I'm going to try to get a better job. In other words, I'm thinking that the problem is out here. The out here is the mirror. It's the result. It's the effect. But the causation of my lack or my pain or my illness or whatever is always an inside job. It would be kind of like, if you can think of this, your world is like a mirror. Like if you go into your bathroom or your bedroom where you have a mirror and you've got on your purple shirt, and so, of course, the mirror is going to reflect a purple shirt, and you go, listen, mirror, that is a really ugly purple shirt, and I've just got to have this be a red dress instead. Well, what do you think is going to happen? You can rail and carry on and demand and shout and pray and implore to the mirror, and not a thing will change. It requires I put on the red dress if I want a red dress to show up in the mirror. So that if I can begin to see that everything has its origin in my own mind. And, of course, now we've got between the new biology people and the quantum physicists and everybody else is on board saying, yes, 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 this is exactly how it is. You know, years ago, we did not have the advantage of having, shall we say, modern-day science confirm what the spiritual people have known for 5,000 years.
Right.
But now everything's
right.
kind of converging, which is really right. And the thing that's fabulous about this, because you might say, oh, I hate this. But the idea that I'm going to have to do all this self-discovery and looking at myself before my life can work, it's like, I don't like that idea. And it's like, well, we better get used to the idea because look what that implies. It says, although I might not know how to do this yet, it does seem like a good idea that my welfare and how I feel rests in my hands and not a whole bunch of other hands who don't care about me. So it's like, well, actually, this is an asset to find out my life is fully my responsibility and I am in charge of how I feel. And the reason I'm in charge of how I feel, which this is really, really important to hear because I'm always surprised at how many adults don't know this. And in fact, I have to digress a minute because I'm still blown away by this. I have two grandchildren. I have a grandson who's now 11 and my granddaughter's 9. So 2 years ago for my grandson's birthday, I was in Denver, which is where they live. So this was a couple of days before his actual 9th birthday. Are you there? Can you hear me? Hello, hello.
Cheryl, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me? I'm talking away.
Okay, we're having some real...
Shall I continue to talk?
Carol?
Yeah, I'm here.
If you can hear me, Carol, keep talking. I'm going to call back
All
in.
Right. All righty. I will keep talking and hopefully that you can hear. So in any event, this little boy is a super, super, super smart little kid. So I thought, he's old enough now that I can begin to tell him, okay, this is kind of the way life works. The things that we think and the things that we believe creates our emotional state. In other words, and so I'm about to try to give him the very short version of this, and I'm saying, okay, the things that you think, if this is a scary thought, and if you feel like you're threatened in some way, the brain is going to, or the back part of your brain is going to turn on. I'm trying to use unscientific language, and I'm referring, of course, to the stress response. And he looks at me and he said, "Grandma, that's called the amygdala." And I thought, how does a third grader know about the amygdala, which is the primitive brain in the back of the brain? He said, I already know all about how the stress response works. I thought, how does a third grader know about the stress response? And I asked his mother, and he said, they learned that last year in the second grade. I thought, when I was in the second grade, I don't know, I was cutting out construction paper, I think. And he was just as knowledgeable as he could be. Well, the thing that's weird is that most adults don't know how the stress response works. I don't know how we managed to not ever learn that in school, but almost nobody does. And because of that, almost none of us know how our thoughts, this is so, so important, don't know that our thoughts, the things that we believe, we may never say a word to anybody else, but the things we believe about ourselves that are too small, that are incorrect, that are unkind and things like that, the brain registers that as a threat. It turns on the stress response. And those chemicals, those heavy-duty chemicals that are put into the body to try to keep us safe, because after all, the stress response goes on when we've told it I'm in danger in some way. And those chemicals flood the body. They're taken up through receptor sites into the cells, and that creates my emotional state. So the things that I believe create my emotions, not anybody else. We say that person makes me so mad or so sad or whatever else. They're triggering our own pain, but they don't cause it. They're triggering these beliefs that we hold about ourselves, and that's causing the pain. That's causing my stress response to go on, and for many people, that stress response never shuts off, practically never. And that causes all manner of difficulties, physical and otherwise. So the result of not being introspective and not doing self-discovery work is we walk around in a kind of a constantly stressed state, which means that we're constantly not feeling good and we need to constantly stay addicted. Well, at some point, that cycle has to be broken. Are you there, Carol? Hello, hello? Well, I have no idea if anybody's listening or not, so since I can't tell from my end, I will continue to tell you a little bit about this. The one thing that I find to be so, literally anywhere in the world and across all populations, would be that everybody is, once now I've turned on my stress response because of the things that I believe, because my world kind of triggers these things about how I'm not okay. And that then starts this cascade of chemicals into the body. And the reason why it's important for that not to happen, although it does so routinely for so many people, is this. Remember that the stress response is to save my life. Without getting into all of the biology, there's a system in the body that controls all the internal organs. And what happens is some things are shut off because they don't need to be functioning right now. In other words, if my life is in danger, whether animals are chasing me or whether I hate myself, it doesn't matter. It's all the same to the brain. For instance, the digestive system is turned off because this enemy, so to speak, or this whatever it is that's going to get me is supposed to be over with pretty fast. This isn't supposed to go on more than a few minutes. That's why these heavy-duty chemicals are designed to work fast and so on and so forth, and then it's supposed to be over with. But if it's not an animal chasing me, which means I'm either going to be eaten for lunch soon or I'm not, so this is a short-term emergency, we can spend all of our lives thinking there's something the matter with us and keep that stress response turned on all the time and just wreck all kinds of things in the physical body and other elements of our lives. But the key is that what I have to do, rather than fighting against the feeling that my own body chemistry now has created, that we'll just call it upset. You could call it anger or grief or sadness or hopelessness or despair or just not feeling well. But we're just going to call it upset and lump them all in the same category. The only way I can now turn all this around is to be willing to feel my upset. Because when I'm finally willing to feel it, then it will start to settle. My frontal lobe of the brain, which is the executive functioning part of the brain, can now come back online. It goes offline when I'm in it, when the body thinks there's an emergency situation. So it will come back online and I can think straight again. When you're in a constantly stressed state, you're not efficient. You can't think straight, literally. How could you with 40% of your brain not working? You can hardly make 2 plus 3 equals 5 make any sense. It doesn't mean that we've stopped being a smart person. It means I don't have access to that kind of intelligence when the stress response is on all the time. So this learning to be willing to feel how we feel is such a crucial first step in getting anywhere, whether it's to feeling better physically, whether it's to improve relationships, whether it's to begin to head down a path of what do I need to do to change my mind here so that I feel better about myself. All of those things begin with I have to make the stress response quiet down. Is there anybody there? Do we know if we're online or not? And I'm not quite sure what I need to tell you next because I don't know if you're listening. I don't know if anybody is present. And since I don't know that, I will tell you a little bit about A Course in Miracles, for those of you who may not know about it. A Course in Miracles, the title is a little misleading because for some people that sounds a little far out. It's actually a very, very, very sophisticated work. And what it is literally for is to rewire your brain. It would be like, as mentioned earlier, possibly, that if you have a computer that has been hacked, something's in there, malware's gotten in there, all of the stuff nowadays with working on the internet brings into your computer that you don't know is there, and it can hamper the functioning of the computer. At some point, you sometimes have to either buy a new computer or most likely you take it in to somebody who's an expert and you have them get all of that stuff out so that your computer programming is running in an unimpeded way and you get the results that you're looking for. Well, what A Course in Miracles is for is practicing a new way of focusing your attention, because focusing your attention is the biggest skill that we can ever learn. Carol, are you
there?
Carol,
can you hear me?
Now I can. I have no idea if I've been talking to nobody or talking to
myself.
No,
I've actually been here, and I've been trying to let you know that, and nothing is going through.
So nobody's hearing anything?
Yeah, no, I think they're hearing it. I think you're definitely broadcasting. We're broadcasting.
Oh.
I just wanted you to know that I'm with you, but I actually had to call in as a guest to reconnect with you because it's not coming through as a host. So
okay.
I just want you to know
here. I have no idea if I'm just talking out my window or if anybody's listening.
No. I'm actually, I'm hearing from people that they're hearing you. So people are hearing you, but I just called in this way. So I apologize for interrupting, but I needed you to know I was here so that
I'm glad
it was the only thing I could think of.
I didn't know whether to just stop or not. So
yeah,
continued down the direction that I was headed, which is since we need to be a little tiny bit scientific here, I think this is important for you to know that the whole front part of the brain that's right behind your forehead, that's referred to as the frontal lobe, which is kind of like the crown jewel of human beings or something, because this is the part that absolutely puts us in a category by ourselves. Like our next ancestor, so far as in the animal kingdom is concerned, like the gorillas and chimpanzees and the primates, if you will, their brains, the frontal lobe, the executive part of the brain, is 17% of the brain. Dogs, for instance, the frontal lobe is 7% of the brain. So when we've got 40% of the brain devoted to the executive functioning, and that means things like the ability to empathize with others, impulse control, delayed gratification, the things that allow us to be a thoughtful, empathetic, wise adult. That's what all that and more is what goes on in the frontal lobe. Now, the other major thing that, that this part of the brain allows us to do is pay attention. See, there are a lot of things that can't pay attention. We can pay attention. And why is that important? Because the lessons in A Course in Miracles are literally for rewiring your brain. It will give you material to think about. It might say, do this lesson and repeat this, you know, three times once an hour or something like that. And it's not like mindless. It's like you're paying deep attention to what it is that you're focusing all of your contemplative attention on. And guess what? In 15 or 20 seconds of this focused thought on something that's true, to replace all of this stuff we believe about ourselves that isn't true, is how we really open the door to a very different kind of life. Because in 15 or 20 seconds, when you look down on an electron microscope, already new connections, new synapses in the brain are starting to develop. So that's why 365 lessons, and they might say, you know, I am as God created me. Well, you could substitute the word. For a lot of people, God has got a Sunday school meaning that they don't, that doesn't work for them. So you could just say, I am as love created me. Well, notice how the repetition and the focusing of all of that 40% of your brain on I am basically a loving presence. You see how that begins to undo the I'm no good, nobody likes me. So the whole purpose of all those lessons is not to learn stuff. There's a text. You can learn things. But the purpose is take advantage of this amazing faculty that we human beings have to be able to completely trade in this old programming that came through no fault of anyone's. In other words, that by the time we're a few years old, we're solidly programmed as to what we're afraid of, what's okay, what's not okay, you can do this, you can't do that. And it all has a very limiting and imprisoning and confusing effect. So that's the whole point of being driven by a two-year-old brain. But this is, I refer to this as really a spiritual technology. And having been in the technology field, I can speak to this with some authority. I know how reprogramming works. And through the steady daily, whatever it asks for you, a few minutes a day, of focusing that amazing ability to give undivided attention to something. And we know we can do it. Look at the undivided attention you give to your phone or anything else that fascinates you, watching television, and somebody can come in and practically yell in your ear, and if you're a guy watching a football game, you're not even going to hear it. All kinds of things can happen around us, and our attention is narrowly focused to whatever we decide to narrowly focus it on. So we have that faculty. It's part of the way our brain is designed. So now we're taking that faculty and using it for an incredibly important purpose, which is to not compete with our early programming of I don't think anybody likes me, I can't do well in life, with I am beloved, I am safe. It's like and this isn't like a mindless affirmation that kind of just peppers over, you might say, fear inside. This is replacing fear with love is what it really amounts to. It's replacing a falsehood with the truth. It's replacing malware in our brains, so to speak, with helpful programming. And because your outer life, whether this is new information or not, it's nevertheless a fact, your outer life will always mirror your inner state of mind. Well, if my job one is to continue to increase the love and the connection and the caring and the wisdom and everything else of my inner state of mind, what happens is we'll just call it your outer life, continues to get better and better and better, and you won't exactly know why. It's like clients will show up or people will be nicer to you, and you'll go, wow, this is really amazing, because we thought we had to fix those things in the outside world, which is not the way it is. You fix, if you want to call it that, the things that we believe, and the Course is one of the most powerful tools that I'm aware of, and I'm aware of a lot. But in fact, this week is my 42nd year with A Course in Miracles, and I have
wow.
I know how it works. So in any event, yes, it was August of 1977. I had two little boys at home. Boy, an interesting thing. At that time, you couldn't buy it in stores. It was just delivered through the mail because you ordered it from the Foundation mm-hmm. for Inner Peace, which was the publisher. And I remember holding that package because that's when there were three separate volumes. It's now combined into one volume, but with little thin Bible-type paper. But at that time, it was in three volumes, and I remember holding that, and the thought came through my mind, my search is over. And that was true, because
wow.
I had spent years and years and years and years before that doing all sorts of searching everything that was available, and I won't even bore you with the long list. So I came into the Course with more, shall we say, a metaphysical background than a lot of people have. But in one way, that really wasn't necessary. It just happened to be a fact. But nevertheless, the Course delivers what it promises, which is your peace of mind, your living on a daily basis with that sense of being cared for and being safe. You see what plagues virtually everybody on the planet is because this stress response is turned on all the time. We chronically live, even if we don't feel terrified, which a lot of people do, live with a kind of low grade, not knowing for sure that we're safe. And we can't get to first base with much of anything else until everything settles in the whole body mind and we can know with certainty I'm safe, I'm cared for, I'm looked after, I make all kinds of mistakes, but those are for correcting, not for turning me into a criminal of some kind. And once I'm on that path, then it's amazing the way life supports you in incredible ways, because now you're open to the support, which really you yourself are providing. In other words, given that the what it is much vaster than just merely being a human body. We're much more than that. And we open
amazing.
Ourselves to the support of everything. And
that's
it's
amazing.
Automatic. It's just automatic. In other words, you reprogram your brain to care more about yourself so that the, and this is not being arrogant. It's not saying I'm better than someone else. It's saying everybody is equally valuable and beloved and gracious, and everyone has a right to be here. We may do horrible things. We may say terrible things at the time and space level, but that does not cancel out the actual truth of us. The part of us that says, I am, and I recognize myself as myself. Yesterday when you woke up, you recognized yourself as yourself. And 5 years before that, you still recognized yourself as yourself. That invisible presence, the life presence of us, is glorious, and it's beautiful, and it's eternal, and it's infinite, and nothing can touch it. Our behavior can be hideous. We can say horrible things, but that never touches the truth of us. And when you go on a spiritual journey, if you want to call it that, it's not really. We're really just letting go of the interference to the peace of mind that's already here, built in to every one of us as we sit here listening. No one has just a half measure of peace of mind. Everybody has a full measure of everything good. And sooner or later, it's our job to clear the cobwebs out of the way, to look at the thoughts and beliefs that are keeping this from being in our conscious awareness, simply because no one else can do it for us. No one else can get into our brain and rewire them. But
that's
I can,
amazing. We're gonna.
I can participate
we're pretty
in
much,
my own. That's it.
I'm so sorry.
I
apologize. We are completely out of time. So if you want to continue for a few more minutes, we can. But I just want you to know that we're out of time, and I don't want to hold you up, and I don't want to take any more of your precious time. And I apologize for all the technical difficulties.
No worries. That kind of just brings it to the end in a natural way, anyway. Which is, here we are. All of our assets, they just need to be made. We need to dig around there in the basement and bring all the stuff out of the way. And then our inheritance is right here available to us. It's here for us now, but we've kind of covered it up with things we believe and the pain that comes from those things we believe. So it's actually simple.
You know, the things that you have said tonight, for what I was able to, I mean, I really was part of most of this. I just had that glitch in there where I had to scramble to get back on.
Uh-huh.
It's just fabulous. Absolutely amazingly fabulous. It seems it's not easy, but it's not difficult, but mainly it's simple if we just reprogram
yes.
ourselves to think differently. And
yes.
I'm it's not like I haven't done some of these things that are similar before, and it's not like I'm unfamiliar with the principles of which you speak.
Mm-hmm.
However, the context in which you've presented this is just, it's beyond words, because it just, it boils it down to a very doable, practical, and hopeful.
And that is our goal. And the thing that's really great is that, and this still just astounds me, that that people who have been miserable with all kinds of guilt and they, you know, the details don't matter, they can be set in the right direction with like one counseling session, you know, where they feel encouraged by the fact that they have not ruined themselves. They've believed some things that aren't true. And of course, I can tailor make this conversation to their particular situation. And this never ceases to amaze me that people will, I'll hear from them and their whole lives have just sort of like fallen into place and things are working out. And it's like, I have no idea how that can happen so fast. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's not going to – it's a step thing. You've got – okay, so you've discovered this. There's something else to discover, something else to discover. But I was talking to a young woman, a youngish woman in Finland the other day because I have a lot of international people and Skype is wonderful. You can just talk to anybody in the world. And she had a usual relationship difficulty and leaving her second husband and a third and a little boy and a blah, blah, blah. You know, the usual family complications that people get. And after one session, I've heard from her two or three times, she said, I am just amazed. Everything's working out. I'm going to be able to move up to the wherever part of the country she needed to move up to. And the ex-husband that she's leaving is becoming cooperative. And she said, I just can't believe this. It's like, yeah.
Wow.
You know, to the extent that you're willing to pay attention to the fact, and it always is going to start with the first thing you must do is calm the chemicals in your own body from your own upset right now. Because we cannot have a conversation about what to do next until the chemicals are calmed. You do not have access to your intelligence. And they're willing to do that. So that's the key. That's the reason why this whole idea of you must be willing to feel how you feel is so important. Because then you can't do any meaningful sort of self-discovery work. You can't stand back and go, oh, yeah, I can see that I can do this, or yes, I can see I'm afraid of that. You can't do that with 40% of your brain gone temporarily.
Right.
And that's why it's just so vital. If there's one thing I could stand on the housetops and shout, it would be allow yourself to feel how you feel so you will become fully functional again. It's safe to do that. People don't think it's safe, and here's the reason why. They think that the way they feel is a statement of their badness, their weakness, their lack of worth, their not having done something right. Well, who would want to feel anything if you thought that's what it meant?
Right.
Has nothing to
right.
do with that whatsoever, but we're uneducated in that way, and so we run around and family members pass it down to the next generation to be afraid of how you feel, while at the same time not having any idea how you're creating your own emotional state. So it's just lack of awareness. It's not lack of goodness. It's not lack of intelligence. It's just lack of the proper information about how things work, which is
amazing.
Why I'm always on a one-person campaign.
Wow. On that note, I think it's a good time to end.
Okay.
But, I mean, like I said, if you want to keep going, we can. It's just that
I do have other stuff I need to do as well.
Okay,
so,
good.
Anyway,
I'm
you.
Perfectly fine with that. I can't thank you enough, and I can't apologize enough for all the interruptions. I could listen to you forever. You were just amazing. And at one point you called yourself boring. I would never use that as a word to describe you ever. So,
well, I think maybe people might think the material is boring, you know, or something like that. So.
Okay. But whatever context you used, it was just not accurate. So, I am just honored that you spent time with us and that you shared with us. And if I can get, I'm sure I've never had these. I can't say I've never had these technical difficulties, but in the 4.5 years that I've had this radio show, it's only been twice that this has happened.
Isn't that bizarre? So, well, hopefully you can find out whatever it is and make sure it doesn't happen again. I mean, I don't know if you're in charge of the technology or they are. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, they are, but they're going to hear from me so that I can, like, get this straightened out. But let's just pretend that I get this all straightened out in the very near future. If you have a little more time to share with us and maybe do a real show that we can actually correspond and have people interact and maybe be a part of, that would be fabulous.
Sure, that would be fine. We'll just set that up whenever everything's all set and you're ready to go.
Sounds fabulous. Carol, thank you so much. I will get back in touch with you to set that up so that everybody listening, for the choppiness of tonight, I apologize for continuing to listen. I am truly grateful, and know that because there's such choppiness and whatever, I'm so happy and honored that Carol is going to give us a little more time later on.
You bet.
So on that note, I'm going to say thank you to everybody and good night. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Where we have another new guest coming on, and hopefully we will have all these technical difficulties worked out. Look for the post to see what the actual topic is, because this person is so well-versed in so many different areas that we kind of need to nail down the topic, so I'm just being honest. So we'll go from there. And everybody, have a wonderful night. Thanks for hanging on with us, and thanks for your patience. I'm going to end this episode and see if it actually ends. I'm hoping that it does. Good night, everybody. And we usually have outro music, too, but that's not happening tonight either. So I'm going to just try to end this episode.
That sounds great.
Everybody.
All right, dear. Well, I will talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, talk to you later. Bye-bye.